From Nevada Public Radio, I'm Paul Boger, in for Joe Shaneman. It's State of Nevada. The U.S. is in the midst of the largest COVID wave we've seen since July 2022. That's according to CDC data. And while new vaccines by Pfizer and Moderna will be available this month, Nevada is already one of seven states where scientists are finding very high levels of COVID in wastewater. Mpox has been circulating around Africa again, and just late last month, local officials reported seven probable and confirmed cases of the disease in southern Nevada. So how serious are these two viruses, and should we be worried as we head into the fall and winter? Brian Labus is an assistant professor of public health at UNLV and an expert on communicable disease surveillance. He talked to KNPR producer Ann Davis early last week, just before the Southern Nevada Health District confirmed any cases of Mpox. Here's that conversation.
Brian, thanks so much for sitting down with me today.
Thanks for having me.
So this summer, the Western U.S. has experienced the highest wastewater COVID levels in the country, and that's according to the CDC. What is it about our region in particular that's causing this increase?
When we have outbreaks of COVID, every region kind of gets their turn. So if we're seeing a lot of human disease, we see a lot of high wastewater numbers. Those things just go hand in hand. There's no real rhyme or reason as to why one area has more than another. It's not like there's a special characteristic of the West. We're just leading the country right now in disease. So at some point in the future, it'll be another region and we'll drop down on the list.
Now, staying on the topic of wastewater, why wastewater? Why is that information important? Why do you guys use that as a barometer?
Well, one of the challenges we have is really trying to understand who is infected. And we used to do that through laboratory testing. But when you get sick, you don't necessarily get tested anymore. People use home kits, so we never know who's positive. Wastewater is something that everybody produces, whether they want to or not. We can find that in their wastewater. We know that they're positive, even if they don't have symptoms. So we can look and see what's going on in the community without the community having to do anything other than what they normally do.
So using wastewater, can you predict future outbreaks this way by analyzing it?
It's very difficult to predict future outbreaks. We're still trying to understand exactly what the wastewater tells us. One of the challenges is if we see an increase in the wastewater, does that mean it's more people or is it the same number of people giving off more virus? Those are the things we're really trying to understand about it. We've done a lot of work on that over the past few years of COVID. We can also look for other diseases, though. It's not just limited to COVID. We can look for flu. We can look for gastrointestinal diseases. There's all sorts of things that we can use wastewater to look at.
So you mentioned that wastewater is not one of the ways that you can predict, you know, future COVID outbreaks. Are there ways to predict it in terms of, like, will we have a good fall and winter? Will we not?
It's really difficult to predict disease outbreaks because if we could do that, we could actually intervene and prevent them. It's kind of like predicting the weather. We know that things are going to get worse in a general sense, but saying what's going to happen on a particular date or what those trends are going to look like will be very difficult. So we know that COVID will increase as people spend more time indoors, as we see these kind of long-term trends in COVID, but it's really hard to say exactly what's going to happen months out from now. It's difficult even saying what's going to happen 2 or 3 weeks from now, let alone later this year or next year.
That makes a lot of sense. So what's the latest COVID variant of concern? Is it still this flirt variant that we've been hearing a lot about?
There's always different variants circulating. And so the CDC will produce charts that show what's spreading week by week. They're all kind of in the same group, though, which is how we were able to produce the new COVID vaccine, which is coming out any day now. So that is going to match up better with the variants that are circulating. Sometimes there's a slight change where the variants are almost identical. Sometimes it's a major change. We've just been seeing these slight changes over time, which allow us to at least target those for our vaccination.
And like the flu, are we able to see in other countries, in like in South America, which strains are heading our way so we can develop vaccines ahead of time that way?
It's really difficult. With flu, we have some major categories, so we know how to target those. With COVID, we don't have those different categories. So people think of flu as one disease. We actually have two different types of flu that circulate every year, influenza A and influenza B, which are very different. And then within that, there's some variation. With COVID, we typically have one main strain that's out there. It circulates for a bit, and then a few months later, the next one comes out. So it's not quite the same thing. We also don't have the seasonal patterns of COVID like we do with flu. Flu has fallen into a very regular seasonal pattern. COVID's not quite there yet. We're still seeing humans and COVID kind of feeling each other out, and at some point we'll fall into a pattern. We're just not there yet where we can say, well, if we track what happens in South America 6 months ahead, we'll know what's going to happen in North America. It doesn't quite work like that with COVID yet.
Gotcha. So as we said, the Southern Nevada Health District reported that as of mid-August, more than 2% of ER visits might be related to COVID. So hospitalizations are essentially relatively low. Does that mean that COVID is becoming more mild as a virus, or that we all collectively have more immunity this time around?
Well, it's a combination of things. Part of it has to do with the severity of the virus and how we respond. It also has to do with how much transmission is occurring in the community. So we're on the upswing of things now. If you look at the percent of hospitalizations nationwide, the numbers are still pretty low compared to where we were the last time we had a big spike in COVID, but they're trending up. So it's really more of just a matter of time until we see those percentage of hospitalizations increase. Once we see where that peaks, we can say, well, this is a more severe strain that's putting more people in the hospital, or it's a more mild strain. But as people are getting vaccinated, especially with this new vaccine, that should hopefully keep those numbers of hospitalizations down.
So 2% doesn't sound like a lot. Should we not worry about this outbreak since catching it this time around likely won't hospitalize otherwise healthy people? Or is this still something to be kind of concerned and careful about?
COVID's still a serious disease. It has higher hospitalization rates and higher death rates than influenza. And the other concern is a percentage of people who get COVID, especially more severe disease, wind up with long COVID, where months or years after their infection, they're still dealing with the after effects of it. So for most people, COVID is an annoyance. But for some people, especially those with underlying health problems and immune issues that put them at higher risk, it could still kill them. So it's not something we can move past yet. It's not something that's as mild as a head cold. We like to say it's no worse than flu sometimes, but flu is also a serious disease. So it is worse than flu, and flu itself is bad enough. It's not something we should underestimate, and that's why we want people to get vaccinated to try and avoid the worst effects of whatever happens in this next round of COVID.
How common is long COVID right now with these current strains?
It really depends on how severe your initial infection is. So it's something that still happens. It's something that's a regular occurrence with people who get COVID. Most of the time, it clears itself up rather quickly. A few months later, people may have some lingering effects. But for some people, it's a serious, almost lifelong problem after that. We're still trying to understand long COVID. Part of the challenge is really defining it well and saying, this is what long COVID is. You know, say you don't have the ability to taste or smell things 2 months after COVID. Is that long COVID? And if so, is that a big deal? Versus people who have severe respiratory problems or neurologic issue. Brain fog is something that people talk about with long COVID. We're still really trying to understand why those things occur and really help figure out what they are, because then we can do something about it.
So are we back to a point, case rate wise, where you'd recommend that Las Vegas start masking again?
We haven't gotten to that point yet. For people who are at high risk of disease or high risk of severe outcomes if they get it, masking is something to consider, especially if you're in close contact with other people. As we move into the winter season, we'll have more and more discussions about that. The official CDC recommendation is not that we're at the point for masking yet, but for some people, it's not a bad idea. For the average person, it's probably not going to make that much of a difference right now, but as we move forward and see more and more COVID, then it makes more sense to wear a mask if you're in a close, crowded condition with a lot of people who are coughing and sneezing all over you.
So let's move to another infectious disease making local and especially international news lately. Mpox is on the rise, specifically the clade 1B variant. This is a different strain of the virus than what circulated during the 2022 to 23 outbreak. What are the consequences of clade 1B being the dominant strain now?
So clade 1B is very different than the clade 2 that we dealt with last time when Mpox showed up a couple years ago. Clades are basically just big groupings, so they're the families of the viruses or they're how they're genetically related. The one that caused the outbreak last time was a more mild strain, and most of the transmission was skin-to-skin contact, typically during sexual contact. So it also didn't kill very many people. The death rate was about 0.3%. With the new clade that's circulating, it's the one that we used to see as kind of the endemic one that had a death rate about 10 times that in areas of Africa. Now, I wouldn't expect that we would see that level of problem if it comes to the United States, because we have better medical support than and care for the people who are infected than a lot of the areas experiencing the outbreak right now. It's a more severe disease, though. It's just a nastier disease to get, even though they're both types of Mpox.
How do you keep tabs on community spread of something like Mpox? Will wastewater surveillance work for this virus in terms of detecting it early? Are there other methods that you use?
For something like Mpox, we're talking about a rare disease, so we might be able to pick it up in our wastewater surveillance. The question is it worth putting all the financial effort into it there or using another system to try and identify that? We can use it to look for rare diseases, though. It's a way to find things that have moved the community for the first time. So it's something we could potentially do with wastewater surveillance. Really, it's focusing on clinicians and getting them to identify the symptoms of it. And if people recently have a travel history to the areas where this is occurring, then to consider that and work with the laboratories and the health departments to get the appropriate diagnosis.
I see. How do people catch Mpox in the first place?
So this is a pustular rash illness. You get pustules all over your skin, and it's coming in contact with somebody's skin. So your skin rubs against theirs, and the virus moves from person to person. It's a challenge because you're talking about behavior that brings people in close contact. So it's plenty of opportunities for disease spread. And that's what we saw in the outbreak in 2022. There was a lot more sexual transmission. That's really the big change with this current clade that's out there. It used to be one that was it wasn't spread through sexual transmission as frequently. We're seeing that a lot more in Africa right now, that it's in the first outbreak in 2022, it was men who have sex with men. This is kind of across the population now that we're seeing in Africa. So it's a little different spread, but it's still skin rubbing against skin. And if one person has the virus coming out of their skin, that's how it spreads to another person.
Okay, so these are not respiratory droplets. This is very close contact.
This is close contact. You have to spend a lot of time directly with somebody. This isn't like passing somebody in the grocery store or standing in an elevator with them or something like that. It's much more difficult to spread than flu or COVID or things that we're more concerned about, you know, that just spread through the population quickly. This is that direct skin-to-skin contact and that extended contact with people.
So the World Health Organization has said that Mpox is not the new COVID because health officials know how to contain it in a way they didn't when COVID began circulating about 4 years ago. But people do see the rising numbers in Africa, 14,000 cases so far this year, and they're concerned. So how worried should we be?
This is something that public health officials are concerned about, looking at, is this virus coming into the country? And if so, how do we track it? How do we prevent it from spreading? So for the average person, unless you travel to the areas of Africa that are having an outbreak, you're not at any sort of increased risk. But this is the kind of thing that we're generally concerned about because an outbreak anywhere poses a risk anywhere else in the world. An outbreak in Africa can quickly move to the United States, quickly move to Las Vegas, and we can see disease transmission here. Doesn't mean it's going to. It just means that we need to pay attention to those things. And when the World Health Organization talks about these things being public health emergencies, they need resources to the areas that are having the outbreak, and they need surveillance from the rest of us to make sure that it's not spreading. We've seen a couple of cases outside of Africa and Europe, and they were both people who returned from travel directly to those areas where this outbreak is going on. But the same was true with Ebola. When that outbreak happened in West Africa, we were always concerned about it coming to the U.S., and so we did a lot of work to track it and try and identify it when it first got here. And then we had the rare case we could put a ton of resources into making sure it doesn't spread. With Mpox, it'd probably be a little more of a challenge to keep it from spreading compared to other diseases, but we do have a vaccine, so we could target the groups that are at high risk for it in the country, whoever those will be, and try to prevent transmission within those groups.
So this sounds like it's not something that should keep the average Southern Nevadan awake at night.
You're much more likely to be around somebody with a common cold, with influenza, or with COVID, and those are the things we really want people to focus on, getting their COVID vaccines, getting their flu vaccines, and trying to prevent those things. Because we know those things are coming. Mpox is this potential risk, but COVID and flu will certainly be here this fall, and we can actually do things to keep you from getting really sick or being hospitalized or dying.
Dr. Brian Labus is an epidemiologist and assistant professor at the UNLV School of Public Health. Brian, thank you.
Thank you.